Hello and welcome to the Evie Cafe Takeaway. Welcome back, even, because I'm sure you've been here before. And this is our lovely podcast, and we're very excited today because it feels, John, like we're going back in time, because we are speaking with the CEO of My Energy. What an OG sponsor of the Evie Cafe. Perhaps the reason that we're all here. It's very exciting. And I'd like to welcome Andrew Clint, although you weren't there at the time, Andrew.
No, that's correct. And firstly, thank you very much for having me on. Great to see you both. Saw you both at the installer show, and we did quite a nice chat there. So, I wasn't there at the time. So that was back in the days when Lee Sutton and Jordan Brompton founded the business. And they're still both very much involved. So Lee's our chief innovation officer, and Jordan is still a major shareholder and gives us lots of great advice on how to keep steering the business forward. I joined in January of 2025, so I've been about sort of 18 months or so now, and I was really delighted to join such an established name and a trusted brand in the EV charging and overall home energy management system space.
Fantastic. John, it's exciting, isn't it? It's great to be joined, of course, always by one of the team, and I've got the lovely John, who I think you took the original phone call, John.
Yes, I did. We set up the conversation with My Energy through mutual friends, got chatting and just explored the potential of working together, because My Energy was such an innovative business and remains so, looking to make things simple in the UK. And I've been a long supporter of Team GB and Team UK, and it's important that we look inwards sometimes for solutions. We don't constantly look to government to solve things. We don't look to other countries to solve things. And My Energy and Jordan especially grabbed hold of that ethos and just said, I want it, I'm having it, and we're doing it.
So, Andrew, it is a great privilege to welcome you on, really. And it must be quite exciting, because obviously we've got this heritage of the brand and the evolution of the brand that has become, I don't know, synonymous. I mean, Jordan is quite a force majeure when it came to marketing the My Energy brand, and really helped it stand out as a brand. How is it feeling now 18 months in? You know, you've got your feet under the table. What's the direction of My Energy, and what do you reflect on those early years and now how you can build?
Yeah, and we've just had our 10-year anniversary celebration, so that was 4th of July. So we got
where was the
Jordan
invite?
And Lee, did you not get it?
Good Lord.
You know what the postal service is like these days. It's shocking. But yeah, I mean, you're welcome anytime to come and see us in Stanningborough, over in Lincolnshire. So we had that celebration. That was really the moment at which we looked at the 10 years that had gone up to this point. And then we thought about, where do we want to be going forward? And I thought it's really nice, actually, that Lee Sutton, originally when he started the company, he wanted a 100-year business. So what we themed it around, we've done the first 10 years, now let's look forward to the next 90 years to get that 100-year business. So that was really the theme. And I think, we talked about this a bit at the installer show. My Energy has become synonymous with Zappi, the EV chargers. So the first solar aware EV charger, I think, anywhere. And what we wanted to do really was to get back to Lee's original vision, which wasn't just about EV charging, but it was about the whole home energy management system and how we can make the energy that flows through everybody's home really work in the best possible way for consumers. So that was what we talked about on our 10-year anniversary, is about how we get the business back to being that home energy management system company, so that we become known, yes, for the great products like Zappi and Eddy and Harvey, but also for the ecosystem that ties it all together, and how we can help customers to really cut their cost of living, which obviously everybody wants to do at the moment, at the same time as contributing towards net zero.
Yeah.
Andrew, we'll go back through your resume in a little while to see how you've got where you are. But I'm intrigued by My Energy as an organisation, because you've grown exponentially, and sometimes that's a challenge and a risk. but you seem to have kept the secret sauce, kept the magic of My Energy as you've been through this transition. What is that secret sauce? What's the magic that makes My Energy stand out when so many charging companies have come along and disappeared?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great question. I guess it's one that we ask ourselves on a regular basis to make sure we're not breaking anything as we go further forward. Firstly, we're really lucky with the people that we've got. So we've got some absolutely fantastic, dedicated people. Whether you're talking about the engineering team, and there's some people in there that have worked with Lee right from the start, and they're still with the business today. So I think that certainly helps. And then if I look across the whole business, other people have come and gone along the way, but we've got a fantastic sales team. We've got a fantastic customer support team. And really any department you look at, you've got the dedicated people that, really care about the brand and care about what My Energy is. And that was, one of the things that attracted me when I looked at joining the business. So I think that's the first thing. I think the second thing is really being clear about what we are. And also what we aren't. So we are a home energy management company. So we therefore don't do commercial. We don't do industrial. We don't try to be everything to everybody. And I think that's possibly one of the things that some of the EV charging companies that have come and gone have tried to do. And if you're still a relatively small business, so we're a £50 million turnover business, you can't do everything for everybody because you don't have enough cash flow to do all of that. You don't have enough engineering resource to develop all of the products that you would like to develop. So you've got to make some choices about what you do. And that's when I came in and we looked at our three-year plan for which I set when I came into the business. It was really about that, going back to the home energy management system, being clear about what we did, developing the products that would best address that part of the market. And then also because we are already an international company, so we're already in Europe and Australia, it was then rounding out the product set for those markets so that we had the right products in the right markets to enable us to grow.
And you're being very careful to reposition yourself as this energy management company. What gaps are you closing? Because that's quite a shift back to that original vision. What gaps have you got as chief exec that you say, I need to work heavily in this area to make sure that we are the complete business, the complete solution?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. So I think the on the hardware side, we've got vehicle to grid is one thing that's coming up quite soon. That's going to be quite revolutionary in the way that people use their car and how the battery in the car then becomes part of the home ecosystem. So obviously we're working on that at the moment, and the 15118 compliant charger will be coming out in the autumn of this year. We launched a battery product in 2023, so that's Livy. Which was a key part of the hardware ecosystem that you need in the home. And we're seeing a significant uptick in battery installations, particularly since the most recent energy price shock, because everybody recognizes that you can save probably £300, £400 on the time of use tariff a year from a battery system. But then the rest of it is really about the software. So it's then how does the software, our app and our ecosystem, how does that all tie everything together? And that's the area that we're focusing a lot on now in terms of making sure that works in the best possible way for all of our consumers and also for the installers, because we mustn't forget that the installers are a key part of what we do and how we are able to be successful. So last year we launched GridPay, which is a solution where customers can get paid for turning down their charging service at peak times on the grid. That happens in the background, so the customer doesn't have to worry about it. They don't have to think about their scheduling, so we take care of all of that, and then they can earn up to £150 a year on the back of just contributing to grid flexibility. So it's really about, it's going to be building out more of those kind of propositions. So at the moment we're just doing flexibility on EV charging, but we're definitely going to roll that out onto batteries. We want to look at doing it on hot water as well, because we have the Eddy product, which essentially turns your hot water tank into a connected smart hot water tank. So quite a lot more to come in that world. And then also just continuing to build on the intelligence behind that home energy management system software.
It's curious to me because this makes so much sense. I guess there's two questions running around in my head. First of all, I'm thinking, how much is enough to change the needle? You know, to move the needle, you know, is it £150 a year? You know, a lot of people that are driving your product or driving and then using your product are probably in the slightly higher earner category, typically because they are electric vehicle drivers. That is the sort of cohort of people. But then, so how much is that? But also, you know, in terms of delivery, how much can you deliver through AI, artificial intelligence? This is becoming more and more prevalent in business and in these kinds of scenarios. Are you leaning into that? So how much to move the needle, and is AI playing a part?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a great question because, £150 a year for some people isn't a lot of money. So that's... Is that enough to move the needle? But if you look at, if you have the whole ecosystem, including solar, then we estimate that you can save probably £1,500 a year through time of use tariffs, through participating in flexibility, through optimizing when you charge a battery, when you then use that power at peak times, etc. So if you start to think about £1,500 a year and people's typical electricity bill, you're not far away from getting to zero bills home by installing all of this technology. And I think what we've seen is a bit of a shift in the reasons why people are starting to look at this technology. Because of the early adopters, a lot of it was about the green element of it. It was about contributing to net zero. And now it is a lot more about, it just makes sense to electrify because I know I can save money if I electrify. Certainly if I'm self-generating through solar, I can definitely save money. So a lot of people that we're end customers that we engage with now are talking a lot more about the cost savings than they are about doing it because it's the right thing for the environment. And I think that's been quite a big shift, even if I think about the time that I've been in the business, it's been quite a big shift because the energy price shock that we've had on the back of the Iran war has made people realize that these kind of things can happen. There's nothing they can do about it. The energy price is just going to do whatever it does. So taking yourself more off-grid is a choice that a lot of people are making. And not only in the UK, so the other markets that we operate in as well, the same kind of conversations are being had. If we look at Australia as an example, where they've always had a lot of solar because the sun shines a lot in Australia and the government invested in solar. The government's now investing in batteries. So people are now installing batteries where they maybe didn't first time around when they put solar on. And interestingly, because Australia was never an EV country particularly, interestingly now the EV adoption has gone up massively in Australia, and that's purely on the back of people realizing it's cheaper to drive an EV than it is to drive an ICE car. So again, it's not so much about net zero anymore, it's about cost. So I think the cost element of it actually is the thing that we as a business and everybody in our sector really should be driving with customers, because then we get the customers benefit from it. Obviously, the grid benefits. Ultimately, the environment benefits, and everybody wins. So it's a no brainer. And I got a feeling there was a second part to your question, which I can't remember.
There was, and I'm terrible at this, aren't I, John? I should be rapped on the knuckles. In fact, let me get here's a ruler, and there we go. There, that's it. That's naughty.
You wouldn't hand that over to me, I tell you.
But yeah, the second part was obviously with the growth in AI and particularly sort of software managing kind of times of use tariffs and all that kind of stuff. How is that playing a part in the business?
So we're using AI. So we've actually set up a AI and data group in the business, which has got a range of managers and senior managers and people actually from across all levels in the business on that council, and they're looking at how do we use AI and how do we make better use of data, and we invested last year in a new data lake working because all of our data sits on AWS. So it's using various different AWS tools. And since we put that data lake in, which then aggregates all of our data from different sources across the business, we can then run AI agents and AI tools on top of that. So we're just in the process of building out some of those tools at the moment. We're also using AI a lot in software development. And both firmware and software. So we're using it for test and then for coding, always with a human. So we are using it as an assistant, I suppose, to the human coders so that they're always in control. We're certainly not at the point where we would just have AI write the code and then commit the code because that's still, you know, a bit risky. So it's definitely accelerating the things that we can do in the business, and I'm very excited to see what we actually do over the next sort of 6 to 12 months with the use of AI. Now, I was talking about building out the customer facing applications, so we will definitely be looking at how do we integrate more, I suppose you could call it machine learning and AI into those applications, so that we can. Take all of the data that comes out of all of the connected devices in a person's home, work out how they use their EV on a weekly cycle or monthly cycle, when do they consume most electricity, and then we can optimize all of that, you know, battery and car and solar self-consumption in the background, again, without the customer having to think about it. Because the other danger with the whole of this technology and the adoption of this technology is when people get devices from multiple different manufacturers, they don't all talk to each other, and then you've got somebody trying to then configure a battery and configure the EV charging and all different on different apps, and that's when it becomes too complicated and too confusing. So we've got to make it simple for people, which is, as well as the cost benefit, that's making it simple is the other part of how we get people to adopt it.
100%.
Andrew, I'm interested in you as a person, in that we're people of a certain age. You know, I'm significantly older than you and Paul, but you get to a point in life where you think, I might actually start to turn the wick down on things. You know, that, yeah, I've been there, I've done it, I've seen it, I've got the T-shirt, but none of us have. And I'm fascinated to understand why you have said, I'm inspired enough, I'm passionate enough to go to my energy and do my thing. What is it about you that makes you do that?
I suppose I've always been quite driven and focused throughout the whole of my working life, really. And I've never wanted to sit back and just accept that whatever business I'm working in is going to be the final thing that I do, for one thing, or that that business has reached the maximum potential it can ever reach. And I've worked across different sectors. So I started out in, actually, when I first graduated, I was an estate agent for a short period of time. And then I joined the audit commission, did some auditing, which wasn't much fun. Then I joined British Airways, and then Dell, and then De La Rue, and then a couple of other companies in between, and then My Energy. So it's been different sectors, different roles. But the common theme has always been that I've tried to leave everything in a better place than when I joined. And I think that's one thing that definitely drives me, both in terms of what I do in work and also, you know, what I do outside work as well. And I think it's as soon as you get into a business, you start working with the people in that business, and you start to think about the fact that there's all of these people who are reliant on you making that business a success, because their livelihoods and their career development all depends on that business. Then that's definitely a motivator to all of us to keep on going and to try to grow the business and try to, as I said, leave it in a better place than it was when we got there.
What sort of management team do you have directly reporting into you? Do you have quite a number of people?
Yeah, I do, because we've got quite a traditional structure. So we've got an operations function, we've got a sort of sales function, the chief revenue officer. So we've got all of those roles. So they all report into me. and we meet on a weekly basis to have a weekly cycle around what's going on in the business and how do we address any issues that are coming up in the business. And then we're trying to make a bit of a shift away from us at the leadership team level getting too involved in the day-to-day detail. Because obviously what we should be doing is we should be focusing on the long-term future of the business and the strategy of the business. So just in the past, probably about 5 months or so, we have set up 3 councils, one to look at operational excellence, one to look at customer experience, and one to look at employee experience. And what we're trying to do is to get those councils to basically push us as a leadership team out of the way of the day-to-day running of the business so that they have the power and the autonomy to run the business. And then we can be focusing on the longer-term future, so building relationships with government or with investors or focusing on the big tenders that there are out there that we need to win, so focusing on the big customers that we need to win, or thinking about that longer term future for the software that I spoke about before. So that's where we're trying to focus ourselves. And I'd say it's semi-successful at the moment. We still, as a leadership team, I think we all have a bit of a tendency still to get a bit too much involved in the day-to-day detail.
But I suppose what you're doing is you're democratizing the business in that you're handing your inspiration and your passion to other people to deliver. And your role is there to guide and direct, but ultimately enable people to give of their very best. And that seems to have been the history of the business as well, that there's an expectation that people are the answer and they can be empowered to go deliver their very best.
And if you think about the 10-year history of the business, it and I think every startup goes through the same sort of journey. So it started out with it was Lee, Jordan, and I think 3 other people, so it was 5 or 6 people at the start, and they developed the products and put the products out to market, and then from there it grew very, very quickly. So any business goes through that phase of being that really small cohort of people who did everything and knew everything into something that then needs systems and structure and process and so on. And especially as MyEnergy has, it's got investment in from Energy Impact Partners in 2023. So as soon as you go through that whole of fundraising cycle and investors come in, they want certain processes and procedures to be in place in the business. So you move from what can be a very agile, lean business with easy to make decisions. You move into something which is more complicated and has got bits of paper that need to be moved from one place to another and different people need to sign off on them. And you've got delegated authority from the board to do some things and not other things. So it does become a very different business. And obviously, since I came in, one of the things I've tried to do is to I manage the board relationship and keep the board informed about what's going on, and try to make sure that my rest of my leadership team are exposed to the board when there's something that particular that they need to talk to the board about. But otherwise, to then try and shield the business from the day-to-day questions that come through from the board. But it is difficult to make that. Or to strike the right balance, I guess, between having all that governance in place that you need and still being a lean and agile business. And especially for some of the people that have been there from the start, they recognize that difference in how the business operates going forward. So that's one of the things about the councils. It's really to try to get taking some of the lean principles from lean manufacturing. It's trying to put the people who do the work, giving them the power to make the decisions rather than everything floating up to the top.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europe Karma. Search Europe Car Business.
It makes me curious as to how you became this kind of person that is able to, John used the word democratize the sort of decision making and the ownership of and all of those kind of things into the people that are making those daily decisions, but sometimes need a little bit of board guidance. But as you were, like, I mean, were you sort of captain of the chess team at school? Were you I mean,
said in the nicest, supportive kind of way.
Yeah. But I mean, but that, I suppose it's a strategic decision making kind of process, but there's still a team thing around it. You know, forgive me. I played chess at school. It was the one thing that kept me out of trouble from time to time. By the time I was 11, I'd been thrown out, obviously, and never got back to the chessboard. But I have had other good chess experiences that I'm very positive about the game. But what was school like and that journey thereafter? That, I mean, for me, it's a very rounded position that you find yourself in today. But were you always that kind of bringing together, thinking strategically kind of person, or was there a journey?
No, I probably wasn't. And I'm still on that journey, so I'm still not. I'm definitely not the finished article by any means. And if you ask my son about playing chess, he will tell you that I'm useless at chess.
I'm very good. I'll play
easily. But he's at that age where he thinks I'm useless at everything.
I've got one of those too. Yeah.
The journey. I've never been one of those people who planned out my career step by step. So a lot of it has. I wouldn't say a lot of it's happened by accident. So I've always made choices at the point where I had a fork in the road, so to speak. But I wasn't somebody that sat down when I was 18 and said, by the time I'm 32, I'm going to be here. That definitely wasn't me at all. Because I started out, I wanted to be an architect. So when I was at school, I was absolutely certain that I was going to be an architect. So I went to university to study architecture. And you may or may not know, it's a 7-year course eventually to become an architect. So it's a big investment of time. I only did the first 3 years, which got me a bachelor's degree in architecture. And then the country was in a bit of a recession at that time. I couldn't get a job as an architect because you're supposed to go 1 year in industry before you then go back to do the master's. So then I decided, so that was the first point I made a pivot in my thinking. And it was probably as straightforward as I thought, well, can't be an architect. What's a profession that is always going to be required? So I thought accountancy. So I decided to retrain as an accountant. And that was when I first became an auditor, which, as I said, wasn't for me at all, because I suppose in my mentality is always to do something, not just to check other people's stuff. And auditors are inevitably just there to check other people's stuff, not to actually do stuff. So I decided, still wanted to be an accountant, but not an auditor. That was when I then joined British Airways. And I suppose what I concluded at BA, which is where I finished my CIMA, Chartered Institute of Management Accounting qualification, is that I didn't want to be a back office accountant. I wanted to be at the front of things. So helping to steer the direction that British Airways in that case was going in. And I did some really interesting roles there. So I did, and this is before Terminal 5 was built. So this was when it was going through its endless inquiries. But I got the opportunity to build a massive Excel model of what British Airways would look like in 50 years time, and how many flights would be going where and how many passengers there would be, and therefore what Terminal 5 needed to look like. Now, obviously, all of that was, yes, none of it happened in the ways it was built in that model. But I suppose that really gave me the interest in thinking about how data and modeling and those kind of things can shape a business and can be used to drive a business. So then I left British Airways when, frankly, I didn't get the job I wanted. So I left. I thought, they don't want me, so I'm going to go somewhere else. And I joined Dell Computers. And again, I went into finance and in front office finance. So I was always at the customer-facing end of finance, never in the back office. So I worked in several different businesses across there. I got the opportunity to live in South Africa and in Czech Republic, which was great for learning different experiences, different cultures, and different ways that people work as well, which is all kind of feeding into how I like to work. And I ultimately spent 10 years there before then joining De La Rue, where I then moved out of finance into business management. And that was where I got the opportunity to run proper businesses for the first time. Spent 13 years at De La Rue, including setting up and running a business looking at supply chain track and trace, which was combining software solutions with physical product solutions. And that was where I suppose got to more senior leadership, which is where I then had to start to try to step back a bit. And I say try to, because people who work with me will say that I'm quite into the detail, I'm quite into data, which I think goes back to the finance training. And I still today would always want to make decisions in the business based upon data, which I know is, you never have 100% complete data, so you've got to be prepared to go with what data you've got. But it's always better, I think, to make a decision based upon some forward-looking, what might happen, what's the range of different outcomes that could happen from this decision that we're about to make, and then does that feel like a range of outcomes that I would be comfortable with if all of those happened, or if the extremes happened? And that's how I now try to coach other people to make decisions across the business and make the big decisions that I need to make.
And do you know what, as we speak, you are a very calming person. You seem very stable. And I'm an excitable person. I find you quite calming, stable, solid, strong. All of those, I'm not too sure what would fluster you. But just as you were talking about your experience there, you mentioned BA and you didn't get the job that you wanted. I'm always curious, was it as pragmatic a, okay, was it a bit of a sod you, I'm going to go and do something else then? Was it a bit of a tough experience? Or was it, I'm taking my ball and I'm going to go and play with kids I like? How did that process happen? I mean, I'm always curious to find out how people, because I had a situation where I was head of commercial vehicles on an interim basis in Lease Plant. I didn't get the job. And fortunately for me, an opportunity came along and I went, sodger, I'm going to go then. Because, you know, and then it was one door closing, another door opening, and it actually turned out really well for me. But there was that kind of bitterness and kind of annoyance at the time of that. Talk to us about how that experience affected you personally and how you've come to be the strong, stable, trustworthy person that we see before us.
Well, I think it was very much the same for me. I said, sod you, I'm off. And
yeah.
Luckily, as you said, also for you, another door opened at Dell at the same time. So it was very much like that. And I suppose and even when I think back to not being able to do architecture, which I suppose was quite a tough decision at that point, because it was what I had always wanted to do. And then I decided not to. And I suppose the interesting thing I suppose about me is that I haven't really looked back and regretted not doing architecture. Because I've always managed to find other really interesting things to do, and the combination of everything that I've learnt, whether it was what you learn as an architecture student through to accountancy, etc., all of that I suppose has shaped the way that I think about things going forward. And I suppose what I've learnt over my career is that there is always another path and there's always another door, and you shouldn't be afraid to go and try different things. So whether it was moving to South Africa or moving to the Czech Republic, or moving from the career I'd had previously into the EV charging and home energy management system world, they're all different things. And I guess all carried risk because didn't necessarily know whether I was going to be able to do it, but I suppose I applied the same kind of process and thinking to it, and so far things have worked out.
I should say.
But that comes at a cost, and it comes at a cost because you are a very busy, highly articulate, capable human being, massively intelligent, who is driven to deliver stuff for a business. And the cost is sometimes that we can't balance work and life. Talk to us about your family and how they have helped you and supported you. You mentioned your son. So presumably you have a family who are there saying, go dad, go husband, go get them. Talk to us about that relationship. How do you balance those things?
Yeah. Well, my wife and I met at university, so it's going back quite a few years now. So she was studying history, I was studying architecture. We actually met at a history cheese and wine party. So they and we've been together ever since. So
and that's quite an achievement in itself, yeah, isn't it? In this day and age. Wow, how long?
Don't ask me that because I'm not sure. it's a long time. But yeah, I mean, she's been fantastically supportive along the way because she was with me when we moved to South Africa and then to the Czech Republic and then back to the UK. So she came on all of that journey. And then we've got two children. So my daughter, or our daughter, I should say, she was born in South Africa. She is now 22, and she's just about to graduate from Royal Holloway with a first in computer science. So,
wow,
very proud of what she's achieved.
Right, good.
And
chip off the old block
next week.
Well, sorry, I missed that bit.
More intelligent than me,
right? And
also a lot more creative than me. She does lots of crafts and other kind of things that I couldn't even think about doing. So, yeah, quite amazing individual.
Yeah.
And then my son is 17, so he'd be 18 at the end of August, and he is awaiting his A-level results. As I said before, he is, he tells me regularly that he's a lot more intelligent than me, and he is a lot more intelligent than me. let's not tell anybody that I said that, but he is actually a lot more intelligent than me. So he's done maths, physics and computer science, which is basically just all maths. I mean, it's maths, and he can run rings around me in maths that I think it's not stuff that I've forgotten, it's stuff I've never even known.
Right.
But yeah, he's super intelligent, all that kind of stuff. And then in terms of how do I balance everything? Well, you know, probably not very well, to be honest. So I do like to get exercise in. So I run every morning. So I get up at 5, go for a run. It's a lot easier in the summer than it is in winter to keep motivated to do that. But because I like to go outside, I don't like running in a gym. And I do 5K, and then get back home and have breakfast and check some emails and then start work. And then the working day finishes relatively late, so don't seem to have a huge amount of after work time. So it's really that early morning run actually that keeps me focused and grounded and gives me energy for the rest of the day.
And you're happy with that? I mean, my wife is exactly the same without the running bit, and you know, works from the minute she gets up to the minute she goes to bed, and she is defined almost by her work, and she's hugely successful. But my God, there's a price to pay. Very little downtime, little time together. You're okay with that? That sits well with you, your family. Clearly, it works.
Yeah. This is like a counselling session, isn't it? It's
always. Would you change it? Would you change anything about that dynamic?
Would I change anything? Well, no. I mean, I don't think I would. I suppose I've been doing it for a very long time. So if I think back to my first job at Dell, for example, when I left British Airways, Dell at that time had a very particular way of working. So everything ran on a weekly cycle. So on a Monday, we had a sales review meeting, which ran the whole afternoon. We looked at the trading for the previous week. We looked at what we expected to sell in the week coming up. It all fed into a 13-week quarter. So every week we had to resubmit our quarterly forecast. And I suppose I can still remember my first week at Dell, where I had the task of putting together this quarterly forecast on the Monday, and I had started on the Monday. So Monday morning I was told, there's the spreadsheet, you need to go fill that in. And I think I finished at midnight that first Monday. And then the following Monday, probably I finished at 11 o'clock, and the following Monday it was a bit earlier. And then I automated a lot of it, so I was able to finish a lot more quickly. But I suppose I've always just been driven by doing the best job I can possibly do and trying to make everything slightly better than it was when I got there, as I said before. So would I have it any differently? I think not now. I mean, I can't imagine it being different now, to be honest.
Why would you?
Which
it works.
It then begs the question, I guess, of what happens when I retire, doesn't it?
Yeah, indeed. I mean, a lot of people will often point to a particular event, or often parents, actually, I suppose, or upbringing that forms that I must get a really good job done. And because there's an engine that just doesn't have an off switch that kind of does that. What is that for you?
It was probably my mother who was the one that really drove me all the time with homework, obviously at that time, and always challenged me to say, is that really the best work you can do, or can you make it better? And would always look at the marks I was getting and point out if they were dropping a bit, and that I needed to do better. So it was probably her, frankly, that initially in my early school days gave me that drive and impetus.
And it sort of stayed with you through everything.
Yeah. Oh,
fantastic.
I think so, yeah.
It's a varied career. There's a lot of good stuff gone on over that period of time, many different things and some real key pivotal moments. South Africa, was it Croatia? I think you said, I forget, but what are you most proud of?
Well, I think it's at De La Rue. So for people that don't know De La Rue, it's at its heart, originally it was a banknote printing company. And also did passports and other security documents. And I got the opportunity to create something a bit different, which was the authentication business in De La Rue. And initially, with a team of people that I was able to pick from across the business, we pulled together various different elements of it. So there was a part of the business that made holographic labels that got stuck onto Microsoft computers. There was a part of it that did a little bit of software track and trace, and another part of it that produced a different kind of hologram, which was a business that we'd bought in America. And I was able to pull all those bits together into one coherent whole. And then over the space of 3 years, with the team that I put together, we were able to grow that business from about £30 million turnover to £90 million turnover, so just over $100 million, and we did that on the back of winning some big contracts in the Middle East, in particular, starting off with the UAE and then Saudi Arabia, and then across the rest of the Gulf Cooperation Council. As well as some contracts in Africa. So we had a contract in Ghana, which we won just around about the time that the COVID pandemic was kicking off. So that was interesting, implementing that in rather difficult times. And I think it was growing that business and being able to add value to De La Rue as a company through growing that business and really seeing what we could do with software, which software wasn't in De La Rue's DNA. It was a different thing. But we were lucky to be able to take a team that had worked on a passport part of the business, the passport contracts, and then repurpose them into supply chain track and trace. And that's the systems that we built there are still operating today and still working in those countries, and also supporting businesses and brands around brand protection. So that was great. And I think what I would hope to be able to do with MyEnergy as well is to take MyEnergy from being a £50 million company to a, why not go for a £100 million company? Because it's as soon as you get up to that kind of scale, then you've got a lot more, I suppose, certainty around the ability to survive. It's always, as you're scaling a business, you always get to that point where you've got to be thinking about cash flow, but also the top line and also the profit. And there's a lot of things to think about. But when you get to scale, and I'd say 100 million is a decent scale for a business. When you get to scale, then you've got a bit more flexibility, I suppose, around what you can do. You're generating more cash, hopefully. And therefore you can invest in more products and you can invest in better solutions to do all the things that we talked about back at the start. So that's what I would hope to be able to replicate at MyEnergy.
Looking ahead to when you can be proud next. Sorry, John, go for it.
Well, no, because that's where I'm going to. You spoke about your mother and you said that she always took you back to your homework and asked, is that the very best you can do? And is there more that you can put in? I wonder, are you good enough? You said you're not the finished article. Are you good enough when you look internally at yourself? And if not, what's the thing that you would want to work on more than anything else if you had the time and the resources necessary?
Well, no, never good enough. Definitely not good enough. I suppose the thing I would want to work on, I think it goes back to what I talked about trying not to step into the detail of every decision. And I know that I can be very demanding of the people who work for me, I'm sure is frustrating at times, but I suppose I'm also challenging them to think about, is this the best that we can be as a business? Or not, and if not, then what are we going to do about it? I suppose the area that I would definitely want to carry on working on is being a better coach to the other people who work around me, rather than necessarily being someone who steps in sometimes maybe a bit too much. Could I stop being demanding of people and challenging people to say, is this the best we can do? No, I don't think so, because you've always got to be moving forward. It's often the case that just settling for good enough is not good enough, which I know is a bit of a cliche, but I'm going to use it because it probably is true.
I think she done good.
And do you know what the thing is? I think for most people, and obviously we haven't got to work with you, but everything.
Well, but, never say never.
Well, no, this is true. But we can. I think I recognise in my own life that the people that get the best out of me are the people that have got that balance between actually you can do better and this is how you can do better. Like, you know, that coach element with the kind of demand, there's the bar and this is how you jump over it, you know? And I, it sounds like whether you're the finished product or not, you're a hell of a lot further on down than most of us. And have got one eye on what makes you better, which is that, you know, to that point. Anyway, so Andrew, we've had a fantastic conversation. I know that time is against us, and we want to give you the privilege of the closing tradition here on the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast. It is a very special thing, and you are about to get something that only about 170 other people have had. And that is to be presented with the EV Cafe Magic Wand. And so here is the wand, and you are about to get this coming over the airwaves to you. It's now in your possession. You tried to resist. I saw you try to resist, but you couldn't. You had to take it. Excellent. That's really good news.
I did.
You have now been empowered to make a wish that will undoubtedly come true. So tell us, what would that wish be? You've got the freedom to use it as you choose.
I suppose thinking about the My Energy business, and also thinking about everything that has to happen in the energy transition in the UK, what I would see as the one big thing that would make a massive difference is a significant increase in the amount of home battery systems that get installed across the UK, because that's going to benefit consumers in terms of reducing their energy bills. It's going to benefit the grid because we get a lot more grid flexibility and a lot more grid resilience. And ultimately, it's therefore going to benefit the environment. So it's a real win-win for everybody. So my one wish would be that the government puts a huge amount of money behind a battery grant scheme for the UK.
Excellent. Oh, I love the way that it benefits the customer, it benefits the country, it benefits the grid, benefits everybody, including My Energy, which would be, of course, the perfect solution. Andrew, listen, it's been a real pleasure chatting to you and getting to understand your passion and drive and vision for My Energy. John, what are your final thoughts?
The thing I love about Andrew is his consistency. There's a calmness, as you referenced earlier, but there's a consistency of approach. And when I think about leadership, I think about somebody who I can predict how they will work with me, be with me, respond to me, and enable me. And I get that from Andrew. I did the first time I spoke to him. There are standards. And I will give you every support, every tool, everything I can to help you to be the very best you can be. And then I'm going to ask some questions, and then we're going to find ways you can be better, and then we're going to go do it. And it's consistent throughout him, and I love that about him. Don't ever change.
Thank you.
And we're thrilled, obviously, that to be talking to My Energy again. Had a period where we haven't been as close as we used to be to our founding partner. And it's been lovely. It's been really great to see the vision and direction that you're bringing and building on the brilliant foundations that were already laid with Jordan and Lee over those many years that they were steering the business. But it's great to see exactly, where you're going. I love that you are always looking forward. And I love that sort of sense of resilience that you can get that came out of making that decision around the architecture and making that decision to turn away from BA and move on to another business. That resilience that comes through going, yeah, do you know what? There'll be another door. I can go and do something else. I can move forward. And yeah, the past can sting a bit from time to time and you can sort of look back, but having no regrets and not regretting stuff, I think that's a business lesson that many of us can learn from and sort of lay those demons to rest, so that we can move forward. Any final thoughts from you, Andrew?
No, it's been a great counselling session and I feel better coming out of it. So it's great. Thank you.
Good. We live to serve, don't we, John?
It's always, it's actually been a two-way thing. I think, you uplift people, and that's very necessary in the world that we live in. So thank you for that.
Yeah, it's been great. Well, everybody, listen, do connect up with My Energy. You can obviously, we'll put all the links to their website. Connect up with Andrew on LinkedIn. Sorry, I'm hearing a phone in the background. I'm sure somebody's
got to go.
He's late, so we better let him go. Check out all of our other podcasts, everybody. You know where they are: evcafe.org/podcasts. You've got Spotify. You've got Apple. Go enjoy. There's many more. But do share this wonderful story that we've had today with everyone that you know. Have a great day, everybody. Mm-hmm.